The First Life International Web Radio Show about watches and the people who love them. I'm your host, Jerome Pinot, and I'm speaking to you live from Switzerland today. I welcome you to the show, and this is a live show. If you guys want to call us and talk to our guests, the number here is a U.S. number. It is 760-683-2652, 760-683-2652. And this is still the only live horology show where you, our listeners, get to call in and talk to watch industry movers and shakers one-on-one. Well, folks, it's nice to be back today. I started off with a bit of a technical hurdle here as my Skype refused to work today, so I'm actually speaking from a cell phone. So I'm hoping the connection quality will be as good as Swisscom can furnish here in Switzerland. It's beautiful. We're finally into spring mode here, so that's a plus. And it's nice to be back. We haven't had the show for a couple of weeks because I was at the Baselworld Fair. So a lot of interesting stuff over there. I had a really good time. And one of the brands I visited over at Basel was founded by two Danish gentlemen, and they are online with us today. And I want to talk to you a little bit about their brand. It is called Linde Verdelin. And I'm still not able to pronounce that properly, so I'm hoping they'll bear with me and correct me. And I want to talk to you about this brand a little bit because, you know, I always say horology is about blending form with function. It's a lot like software. It's the world where I'm from because I'm not from horology, as we all know. And, you know, function in the watch, in the timepiece, of course, is about reading time. These days, naturally, nobody's really needs a watch to read time because everybody and his mother has an iPhone or some kind of mobile device they can get the time from. And so the interesting thing about Linde Verdelin is they actually put the function back in the form and function duality. And what they did is integrate some interesting, really cool electronic instruments with their watch. So on one hand, they have the awesome design part and the beautiful technical pieces. And then on the other hand, they have this functional part, which is kind of unique to them, I think, with these electronic pods we're going to talk about. Now, you know, other brands do these things. I mean, you have Tissot and Breitling, and they have these kind of, you know, integrated additional features like compasses and stuff in their products. But, you know, I think they're a little bit gimmicky compared to what Linde Verdelin's really doing. They have two devices. One of them is a device that allows you to do diving. And the other one is a device that helps you if you're into what I call commando skiing. And these guys are big commando skiers, so they're going to talk about that. But anyway, I've talked enough. I want to put these guys on and welcome them to the show. This is Morten Linde and Jorn Verdelin from Linde Verdelin. Good morning or good afternoon, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Well, fine, thank you, and thank you for inviting us.
My pleasure. So I want to talk to you guys about the beginnings of the brand. If you could take us back to what I believe was 2002 when you guys, I think you were French for a long time, and you decided to come together basically and create this modern watch company. What was the motivation behind that? How did you guys do it? And I mean, what was the reason? Just take us through that, please.
Okay. Do you want to do that or?
Yeah, I'll start out. Well, it's right. Jan and I, we've been friends ever since we were 6 years old, and we shared a common interest for mechanical watches. Jan is from a family of watchmakers, so we've had a common interest ever since we were small. And the reason for making Linde Verdelin is that we had the idea, or the philosophy, that time should be read analog. So, you know, I need to know, you know, graphically what the time is. I don't need to know it accurate. As soon as I want to do sports, then I need position, And that's why we do the digital instrument. So in everyday use, we'll have a beautiful analog mechanical Swiss watch. And as soon as we do sport, you attach the instrument, and then you have all the precision that you can get digitally.
Okay. Now, how long did it take you to put this company together? How many years before your first piece came out?
Well, it's, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's an organic growth, because I think when we started out, people told us that we couldn't do it, you know, for many good reasons, actually. And when we started out in sort of the turn of the year between 2002-2003, the first thing we did was to try and see if we could combine the mechanical and put the digital on top. And then, well actually, every half year we sat down together and said, you know, should we continue or should we stop? And there was, all the time, there were good reasons to continue. And then it sort of, you know, just grew and grew. And by 2004, we opened the office in London also. And then in 2006, towards the end of 2006, we launched the first watches, which were then called the Bifometer, and the first lab instrument. And then since then, we have... right after we launched that, we started developing the Reef, or the diving computer, which is just, you know, being finished now and being put into production. So you can say that, you know, we have been underway for about 8 years. And actually, I mean, the technology which we have developed in-house from scratch is that, you know, it's a very hard, you know, it's a very tough challenge. And then combining it with, you know, hopefully what other people think are some beautiful, you know, some beautiful pieces.
Yep. So where is the company located? Are you guys in Switzerland and London or Denmark? Or where is everybody?
So,
well, actually, all three places.
Product development and design is in Denmark, and sale and marketing is in London. And, of course, all the watches, they are produced in Switzerland. But the instruments we do in Denmark.
And the movements, the engine in the watches, they're Swiss-made, right?
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
So I think we found out with, you know, the quality that we need, you know, there are very few factories. I mean, you saw the new Spiderspeed that we launched in at Basel this year. You know, the case is so complex that, you know, very few, you know, people, very few case makers can find out how to do it. And actually, we spent the last 2 years just developing the new construction of the Spiderspeed.
Right. And so in terms of on the technical side, you guys really focus on the case, right? I mean, it's a skeletonized case. It's absolutely gorgeous. And this is where the sweet spot is in the timepiece, right? I mean, obviously, the movement's very gorgeous. But the case is where it's at. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. The case is a very important part of the watch. But I think what we wanted to do with the Spiderspeed is, because the case of the Spiderspeed is very three-dimensional, because we have digged into the case a lot. And I think it's really important in this watch that all the way around the watch, you get this three-dimensional effect. So it's not only the case being you know, interesting or three-dimensional. It's also you know, the back case, the movement, the dial, the hands, and the strap as well. So I think it's really important that you have a watch that is in harmony when you look at it from whatever angle.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you can't sort of, you know, shortcut any parts of the watch. I think especially in the price segment where we operate, you know, you have to make a watch which is, you know, 100%.
Right. So talk to me about the price segment. What are we talking about here?
Well, the series that we have now and the families that we have now range between 3,000-4,000 euros to about 12,000 euros. And then obviously if we have pieces in gold and with other precious materials, then they go above that. But the reason for that focus is that in that range, we feel that we can put enough of our own ideas and enough of our own DNA into the pieces. If we have watches that are, you know, costing less than that, then we can spend less money making them. And then obviously we would have to compromise.
Right. And so how many pieces a year do you typically produce?
Well, last year in 2010, we made, or we sold about 400 pieces. And
okay.
You know, luckily or unluckily, we could have sold more, but you know, we hadn't made more. And this year, I think probably 600, 700, maybe 800 pieces. I mean, you know, the response that we received in Basel was extremely positive. You know, the market has definitely changed over the last couple of years.
Right.
So
right.
You know, we're
so
trying to make as many as we can.
Yeah. Well, the more the merrier, right? Do people buy the watches with the instruments typically? I mean, that would kind of make sense, right? Or do you have people who just like, I don't care about the instrument, I just want to see the watch? How does it work? Mm-hmm.
It's a very it's very individual. Some they just like the watch. Some only buy the instrument, and some buy a combination. So it's you know, we sell the instrument to some mountain climbers or whatever. They buy it and they can click it onto their backpack, and some only enjoy the watch. So it's very individual.
Right. And so were you producing and selling the instruments before the watches, or did you do everything together?
No, the rock, which is the instrument for skiing, and the first watches were launched together in the end of 2006.
Okay. Okay. And so you make two instruments, right? One for skiing and one for underwater diving. And I know you guys are big skiing experts and fans, right? Do you go diving as well? Is that why you did both, or was it just some demand for that?
Well, I think, you know, I've been skiing since I was you know, not very old, and it's always been you know, one thing that I, you know, a passion, and lack of a better word.
Sure.
Diving I started a couple of years ago, and I think actually diving and skiing, you know, it's very much the same, because it's about an experience that you know, have, you know, with yourself and also other people. But it's not a competition. But when you do both, and I guess especially so for the diving, you need something which is really high quality and very well made.
Your life is in the balance, literally.
When you dive, you know, we put people's life at risk, and therefore, you know, it's incredibly important that the quality is very, very high. And that you don't compromise on that.
Right, because I'm not a big skiing expert. I'm not really into snow. That's why I live in Switzerland. But I have done paddy diving, and I remember going underwater with these big ass computers, and they're really weighty and heavy. And the ones on your instruments, they're nice and light, and they just clip on, clip off. It's real convenient. I wish I'd had that. I would have bought this without even thinking twice about it at the time I was doing this diving stuff, you know. So that's really cool.
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I interrupted you.
So I'm curious, the people who sell the watches, actually, they need to also sell the computers. They need to understand the technology behind that. Does that make it a bit more challenging to sell, or on the contrary, is it like an added value module that's helpful in sales when you look at it?
I think, you know, what has really been our intention from the start, and this was from our own experience, we wanted to do the dive computer and the ski computer with the easiest user interface ever made.
With the what?
So, with the easiest user interface ever made. So once we test the dive computers, we use a lot of divers that test it. We send it out without a user manual, because it's so intuitive to use that you don't need a manual.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the really important points, because a lot of our customers, they go diving once a year, and they, you know, they should be able just to take it out the drawer, charge it, and then not read a user manual.
So
if you can,
but at the same time, a mobile phone,
you'll be able to use a Linda Berlin instrument. It's extremely easy.
Gotcha. And so just to explain to people, these modules, these pods, as I call them, they're interchangeable. You can clip them on any of your watches, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And so and the question I had, too, is like, if somebody actually steals or if I lose one of the modules, it'll obviously work on any other watch, right? It doesn't get disabled by virtue of being detached or there's no code locking it, right?
No, there's no code locking.
No,
I mean, in the dive computer, you can put in your personal details. So if you lose it, you know, and or if you find a Berlin instrument, you'll be able to verify the name of the person who has lost it.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. And so, you guys actually wrote a book about skiing, right? I think you had a book on Amazon. And I'm curious, did you write one about diving as well, or was it just a skiing thing? Because that's really what you guys are into.
Well, I mean, we started out in 2007 writing just a book about Switzerland, and it was you know, very well received by both customers and other partners. And then we started publishing it last year, and we sold quite a few. This year we have partnered up with a specialist city guides publisher called HD2. So now we do ski guides with them, and also we are planning some dive guides going forward.
Gotcha. Do you guys think that someday your watches will become collector items, or how do you see that panning out in the future? Is that where you would like to see, you would like this to happen, or are you just having fun and if it happens, good, if not, too bad? Or are you really making a statement
I don't think you should plan for having collectors, because that's sort of a I guess they're a fickle group, but if people who likes watches they like our pieces, then we are delighted. And obviously, sort of in the scheme of things, we're not the first watch that people buy. I mean, generally, people they buy Rolex or Tag Heuer, then the more interest they get in watches, the more particular pieces they buy. But luckily, what we find is that our customers, whom we communicate directly with, also, they really like both watches in general, but also what we do.
Gotcha. And are your products available in every market? Is there one in particular? Well, what's the distribution like worldwide? Is it everywhere pretty much?
Before Basel, we were in 15 countries. I think, the next couple of months, we'll probably be in another 10 countries. So, I mean, from that point of view, I mean, we're not exactly worldwide, but, it's right from Argentina to Singapore.
Wow.
And everything in the middle.
I guess it's safe to say you guys had a damn good Basel show this year, didn't you?
Yes.
No, I mean, it was just incredibly busy. You put a question, why we moved away from the independence. And actually, we didn't move away from the independence, but what we had the opportunity to have this stand in Hall 1. And, there's just tremendous traffic, and we deliberately made our stand very open, to welcome people in and to see, what we do. And, we were extremely busy. So we were
You guys had the coolest chairs on your stand too, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
It's really cool. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the fact that you're obviously what I call a modern watch company. There's no heritage, no 300, 200-year-old history there. And it's actually something that, you say with pride. And I guess when you entered the industry with this type of message, did you get a lot of pushback? Was it easy for you to kind of penetrate into the industry and get the relationships going so you could build the product and build the acceptance that you guys seem to have achieved in a relatively short amount of time? I mean, people really respect you guys. How did that pan out?
Oh, but it's always been easy peasy. Never a problem. It's a couple of questions you're asking there, but I mean, first of all, yes, it's been, it's had its problems. I'm not sure I want to bore, all the listeners with this right now, but launching into, the toughest recession in 80 years, being an independent, it's quite tough. Separately, not having that heritage and sort of striking out, to the right. Is difficult when you start off, because most people, they probably like something which they are comfortable with. But having said that, I think also that we don't have a heritage means that we are much freer to do exactly as we please. And, you know, just by having a watch with instruments for skiing and diving is completely different. And in the first couple of years, I think a lot of people looked at it and say, you know, this is just stupid, it's a gadget, it's not real, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, luckily that has changed over at least in the last, you know, 2 to 3 years. Also, you know, with the, you know, the communication that we use, you know, the ski guides, you know, the way that we operate, you know, the way that we, you know, often communicate directly with customers, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We embrace online. We were amongst the first, you know, companies, you know, to embrace, you know, bloggers and forums, et cetera, et cetera.
I know.
You know, you know, it's probably much easier for us to do it because we came from outside the industry into it, and also that we didn't have a heritage that we needed to respect.
Right, and that was an advantage for you guys, and that's where I was kind of headed towards. You know, one of the things that's most fascinating to me about your brand is the way you communicate and the way you guys do marketing, because it seems to me essentially you have an approach to marketing that's not just, oh, look at my pretty product, but it's more of an entertainment type of approach. So you have something rather unique in the industry. It's that the comic book approach, right, with the five characters there. Can you tell us a little bit how you came up with that? Or, and I believe you hooked up with a guy who draws these characters in France. And so how did you come up with that? I mean, it's so, you know, it's like a UFO in the world of horology marketing. So what's the secret there?
Well, I mean, first going back, I think, first of all, you know, we hope that our customers are, we think that our customers are, you know, intelligent people. And, you know, we'd like to engage and entertain them rather than, you know, what you could call, you know, being patronizing or just to show your piece and tell how beautiful it is and, you know, go and buy it. And then also, you know, because we have limited budget, we needed to create a space for ourselves so that when people, they look at what we do, they instantly recognize what it is. And, I mean, other companies obviously do that too, but in different ways, and we just needed to find our own way. And I think it's been, you know, as you say, it's been very well received by everybody. Obviously, there are always people who don't like it, but generally people love it.
Yeah, because in most cultures, or at least, you know, I could be wrong on this, but I think most cultures, they really like comics. I mean, in the U.S., it's huge. In Asia, I think it's huge. In Europe as well, right? So, I mean, you hit all the – you're pretty much – you know, you hit a home run everywhere, right?
Yeah, but it's quite sort of untraditional to, you know, combine it with something which is, you know, quote-unquote sort of a, you know, a hard luxury good and which is steeped in tradition. And, you know, I guess it brings a fresh aspect to it. And, you know, it's, you know, again, you know, we get involved in the stories ourselves. You know, we play around with the stories. We talk to, you know, Dominique Bataille and Thierry Smolder and how, you know, how the story should develop. But actually the story itself is completely separate from what we do. So, you know, we let them control the story. And all we said in the beginning is that we want, you know, some bad guys and some beautiful women.
You want some bad guys and some beautiful women. That always works, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like real life.
I hope so.
So, you know, I was going to ask you some closing questions, you know, like where do you see the brand in a couple of years, whatever. You pretty much answered that already. Clearly, you've had a very successful Basel World Show. You're going to increase your markets there almost twofold, it seems. So congratulations on that. Now, people can find you in stores, obviously, right? You don't have an online shop or anything like that, do you?
We've got online shop as well.
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Okay, sorry. Yeah,
yes,
no, there was just a beep on the line there. Yeah, no, if you talk about the U.S., we are currently in six different cities in the U.S., and actually U.S. is a very important market for us. And one of the biggest, then, you know, for other countries,
why
countries where we are not present, we sell online.
Why do you think the U.S. seems to be more important for your brand?
Maybe it's the Anglo-Saxon, you know, attitude to it. I mean, you know, sort of functionality that you can combine luxury with functionality. you know, the shape of what we do, or that, you know, the U.S. customer is interested in you know, not only standard brands. It's hard for me to say.
Yep, gotcha. Hey, real quick, I forgot to ask you this. Are any other types of instruments in the works, or are we going to stick to skiing and diving?
I think for now we stick to skiing and diving, and there's a lot of possibility of expanding into this area. There's a lot of things happening in diving these years, and I think also the whole thing about the mobile phones and stuff like this. There's a lot of things to do communicating with other instruments. So I hope that this will be what we see in the future.
Gotcha. Really cool, guys. Hey, we're coming to the end of the show there. There are some questions I ask every guest who come on the show, and I'd like to put them to you guys as well, if you don't mind. Just don't think too hard about them. Just whatever comes out of your head, just let me know. And the first question I'd like to ask you,
who should answer first?
I don't know. You guys figure out. Just don't fight. Let's have Morten first and then Jorn second. I don't know. I'm picking this at random.
Okay.
First question is, if you weren't in the watch business, what would you be doing? I know you guys were not in the watch business before, but suppose you weren't in the watch business all of a sudden. Now, what would you see yourself doing?
Well, I'm originally a furniture architect, so I would probably, it would probably be into the furniture industry instead.
Okay.
And I'll probably build a small office on the top of a mountain and just wake up every morning and look out and enjoy the scenery.
That's a good one. Second question, who's the most important person in your life?
Oh, la, la. I've got three children. They play a big role, and my wife as well.
Okay. And last question.
Are the same.
Yeah, the same, right? You don't want to go astray on that one. Okay, guys, what's your favorite time of the day?
Misunderstood. Yeah.
What's your favorite time of the day is the last question for you guys.
I like the mornings.
No, I like the evenings.
Okay,
the evenings,
so you guys
when
are
the
really
have gone to bed, you know, it's quiet. Pardon?
Gotcha. Hey, Jorn and Morten, thank you so much for taking the time to educate us on your amazing new brand here. If people want more information, I know you have a website, you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you're everywhere. You're big on social media. You want to tell the people how to get information out there, what your website is, Facebook, and so on?
Yeah, well, I want to say as well that you're always welcome to call Linda Berlin. The number is on the website. We have people working with us who knows everything about everything in the company. So that's a special thing about us as well, that you can call us direct and ask questions if you have any about the watches or instruments.
Great, and that's very nice. It's not every brand who does that. And as a matter of fact, now that you mentioned that, I did want to thank Aphrodite, your gal who was there, who spent a lot of time showing me the product at Basel and being very patient with my dumb questions. So you guys have great staff and you have great support, and you guys are really awesome. I really enjoyed meeting you in person and discovering the brand and the product. And thank you so much for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, John, for inviting us. Thank you.
Pleasure. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that was kind of cool. That was more than kind of cool. It was very, very cool, actually. This is pretty much it for us. My name is Jerome Pinault. My website is jeromepinault.com, P-I-N-E-A-U. I am a social media strategist, but you knew that already. The website for our show is whattimeradio.com. Check it out. See who we have lined up for our next shows. I can tell you that we're going to get some interesting folks in the next couple of weeks, but I'm going to keep that to myself now, and it will be kind of an interesting surprise coming up next week and the week after, and so on and so on. I thank you all very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this show as much as I did, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.